Judges of the United States Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals. Hear ye, hear ye. All persons having business before the United States Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals draw near, for the court is now in session. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Yes, Your Honor, 5 minutes. Thank you, Judge. Good morning, members of the court. Judge Posh, Senior Judge Johnson, we have met. Judge Key, I have not met yet. Pleasure to argue to be here again today. Your Honor just correctly stated the issue before the court, so instead of reiterating it, I will go into the standard of review, and then we'll talk about the instruction itself. What I do not intend on doing today, unless the court has a specific question about it, is to regale you with the very sordid facts of this case. The facts are pretty well known to the court, and so unless the court has specific questions as they relate to the issues, I will not do so. The standard of review for a decision on a tailored defense requested instruction is reviewed for abuse of discretion. That is the D'Amata Oliveira case. The defense requested the following instruction, quote, words to the effect of whether the accused reasonably believed a person consented to the exposure or whether the circumstances reasonably indicated the person had consented to the exposure. The government did not object to the instruction. The actual instruction given is, in determining whether an intentional exposure was indecent, you should consider all the facts and circumstances surrounding the exposure. Specifically, factors you should consider include, but are not limited to, whether the person witnessing the exposure consented to the exposure, whether the exposure was made in a public or a private setting, and the prior relationship between the accused and the alleged victim. The military judge explained his reasons for the denial as follows. He said, what you're arguing is essentially why I included the final language and prior relationship with the accused and the alleged victim, in addition to the part about whether she consented to the exposure. That is relevant because the government says that the instruction that was requested was not relevant. Obviously, the military judge believed that it was. He said, to me, that captures the conduct that occurred previously in the vehicle, as the evidence indicated. That's why the language is in there. He then said, I'm not going to further elaborate on a reasonable belief. Quote, also, these are factors you should consider, include, but are not limited to. So that doesn't limit the defense from making an argument along those lines. I think that the third thing set there captures what the defense is pointing to, the fact that they had an incident in the car previously. So I think that's all captured there, so I'm not going to give the additional specific language. The law on tailored instructions is set out for this court in the D'Amata Oliveira decision. The three-prong test is, one, whether the requested instruction is correct. And that's one of the distinctions between our position and the government's position, is that the government argued that the instruction the military judge gave is correct, but that is not the test under D'Amata Oliveira. Two, whether the instructed instruction is not substantially covered in the main instruction. And three, whether the requested instruction is on such a vital point in the case that the failure to give it deprived the accused of a defense or seriously impaired its effective presentation. Appellate courts must read each instruction in the context of the entire charge and determine whether the instructions completed the purpose. So I'll analyze those one at a time. The requested instruction was correct. It was a correct statement of the law. This is sort of a peculiar area of the law in which lack of consent is not an element, but both consent and mistake of fact as to consent are relevant to the questions of indecency. And if, Judge.
Well, I do have a question on that.
Yes, sir.
So the defense asked for essentially, let's just call it a mistake of fact, on the reasonable belief whether there was consent. I'm wondering if you have any insight as to why it wouldn't be a mistake of fact as to the indecency or the indecent manner actually going to the element. And And I know that this is not, this is an issue of a definition as opposed to an element, but do you have any thoughts as to...
I know that in the congressional explanation, they said that indecent, that mistake of fact is not an element of the offense, but it is relevant to indecency. It does create somewhat of a strange juxtaposition, because if one could analogize it to a 120 sexual assault case in which the accused takes out his penis and then proceeds to allegedly sexually assault somebody, the court would tell the members that mistake of fact is relevant as to whether there was a sexual assault, but they would not instruct the members as to whether it was an element, rather, for the indecent exposure. But it is certainly relevant, and we would argue that in both of those cases, you would have to give the instruction, because otherwise it leads to an absurd result, like I said, where you could be acquitted of the sexual assault based on a reasonable mistake of fact, but still found guilty because the panel is not instructed on a reasonable mistake of fact as it relates to the indecent exposure.
So I don't want to put you on the spot, but the question that I have in my mind is, we've seen mistake of fact go to elements all the time. Are there cases where a mistake of fact goes to a definition within that element, and we apply the Carruthers test?
I don't know off the top of my head, Judge. I know that the Baker case tells us that consent and mistake of fact as to consent are relevant to the question of indecency, which is why the instruction was correct as a matter of law. And respectfully, Baker is essentially on, if not on all fours, it's on 3 3/4 legs with the instant case. Baker tells us that the panel must be instructed on the specific relevant considerations on the question of indecency. That is exactly what we have in this case. In United States versus Walton, this court said that even though mistake of fact is not an affirmative defense to indecent conduct, evidence that would be offered to support an honest and reasonable mistake defense, if available, would generally be admissible in determining whether the charged act is indecent under the totality of the circumstances.
Well, counsel, going back to Baker for a moment,
yes,
wasn't the court particularly concerned about the trial counsel's misstatement as to the relevance of the question of consent?
I think the court was particularly concerned about the panel member's question.
And I was also going to mention, yes, the panel member's question.
Yes.
So those two things in combination, they felt like the, I guess you might say, standard or more general instruction was insufficient.
Oh, I would agree, but the rule as announced by the court clearly seems to apply squarely to our situation here.
Do you think you don't think it depends on the circumstances of what's going on in the courtroom?
I think that in any case in which mistake of fact is relevant, or in which consent is relevant to a defense, mistake of fact is also relevant. And I tried to rack my brain in a case in which consent would be relevant, but mistake of fact would not, and I don't think there is such a case. There may be, but I couldn't come up with one.
Would the military judge have erred if he had simply given a more general instruction and not referred to consent or mistake of fact as to consent in this case?
I think he would have. I think that the instruction on reasonable mistake of fact, as in Baker, was a necessary instruction in this case. And so Walton goes on to say that such objective evidence goes toward raising a reasonable doubt as to the charged element of indecency, rather than admitting indecency and claiming mistake as an affirmative defense. The military judge in this case, as I stated previously, actually found mistake of fact to be a relevant consideration. He permitted the defense to argue it. He only said that his instruction already captured it. And we're left with somewhat of an odd situation in this case where, and it's exactly what happened in this case, in which, let's say that there's five specifications, the court is told reasonable mistake of fact applies to A, B, C, and D, and then the court is silent on E. We trust members to follow instructions. We trust members to be well-educated. As apparently happened in this case, the appellant would argue, the members went back and may well have said, well, if he told us that mistake of fact, reasonable mistake of fact applies to this one, he didn't say anything about this one, it must not. The second element under D'Amato Olivares is the requested instruction was not covered by the main instruction. The main instruction included consent, but it did not include mistake of fact as to consent. The words including but not limited to, just as in Baker, are insufficient where consent is included but mistake of fact as to consent is excluded. The instructions on the other offenses discussed both, as I said, so the message to the panel was clear. Mistake of fact was not something that they could consider. They were told specifically they could consider it on other offenses. They were not told so on this offense. Although the members were instructed that they could consider the prior relationship, they weren't told what they could consider it for. The only thing it was relevant towards was mistake of fact as to consent. Finally, the requested instruction was on such a vital point that the failure to give it seriously impaired the defense's effective presentation. The only thing the prior relationship evidence was relevant to was mistake of fact as to consent, as it relates to indecency. As I said, I'm not going to regale the court with the sordid facts, and I'm certainly not up here trying to exculpate my client from his malfeasance. I am, unless the court has specific questions. Judge Posh.
So I'm looking at the final element there from the Carruthers test, and I'm wondering if it's possible that the appellant actually did better with the instruction as given compared to the one that was requested. So follow me here.
I may take some notes, Judge.
So if you look at the testimony of Senior Airman KB, a fact finder could conclude that perhaps that was acquiescence. Maybe it was, there's no issue as to consent. The words consent obviously were never uttered. There's no action by her part. It could be like a passerby in the street that comes upon something that is indecent. Perhaps they acquiesce to it, the passerby doesn't necessarily consent to it, but they acquiesce. And I'm wondering if the members, the fact finder here, could have just looked at her, for lack of a better word, her state of mind as one of acquiescence, which would then allow the judge's instruction as given to examine the prior relationship and whether there was consent. It seems like perhaps the appellant got a lot to argue with here on that third prong, as opposed to, for example, the members having to weigh whether there was in fact consent and whether it was a mistake of fact as to consent. It could be that if it was just acquiescence, that the judge's instruction was perfectly sufficient. What are your thoughts on that?
Here's why I think that's not the case, Judge. Because the defense argued in their closing, as we frequently do, mistake of fact or a reasonable mistake of fact. And I went through the defense counsel's closing argument the other day. I think there were four times when he mentioned words to the effect of a reasonable mistake of fact. And I think in a case like this, in which you're dealing with a senior airman and a younger airman, the panel is going to, let's be candid, not like my guy. There's lots of reasons to not like what my client did. I think that there is a reasonable chance that the panel looks at this and says, she, much like an underage victim, she can't consent. You know, when you say, hey, look here, she can't consent. So then the question becomes, based on their prior conduct a little while earlier and weeks earlier, would there be a reasonable mistake of fact as to she consented? Which is why I believe that the covered instruction did not go into the appropriate detail as the defense requested on the tailored instruction. Does that answer your question, Judge?
I understand the position.
If it doesn't, let me know on my rebuttal and I'll be happy to explain further. The inclusion of consent, but exclusion of mistake of fact as to consent would have been obvious given the instructions on the other offenses, obvious to the panel. The appellant did not get a fair trial because failure to give the instruction seriously impaired the defense's effective presentation. If properly instructed, the members may have credited mistake of fact as to determining whether the accused conduct was indecent. That actually concludes my short presentation, subject to any further questions from the members of the court.
Is your position that the indecency element is judged by an objective or a subjective standard?
Jeez, Judge, you caught me with a question I hadn't really anticipated.
Well, if we assume that it's an objective standard, we're looking at whether the conduct was indecent objectively. What is the pertinence of appellant's state of mind or his opinion as to whether the other participant was consenting or not?
Okay, I understand the court's question. Indecency, and the best analogy I can give you, Judge, I think it is what does the appellant believe? And the reason why I say that is, if you go to a nude beach and you think that this is a nude beach and I'm allowed to be nude, and you lay there nude, then that's not a crime. If you go to a beach that you think is a nude beach and it turns out you are wrong and you get nude, your reasonable mistake of fact as to your nudity is a defense. because it's judged by your state of mind. So I would think that while the indecency may be an objective standard, I always get the objective and standard and subjective confused, I'm sorry. But while I think that the indecency maybe go towards more of what a reasonable person believed, I believe that the reasonable mistake of fact element of that goes towards what the appellant believed.
And wouldn't that be importing a mens rea?
It would.
Aspect to that third element of the crime?
It would, absolutely, Judge.
And given that there is no mens rea for that element set out in the offense, what would the basis be for us imputing one at this point?
Because there is a mens rea for the reasonable mistake of fact aspect, the relevant, I mean, they wouldn't have included reasonable mistake of fact as a relevant factor if it weren't.
However, it's not included, though.
Well, in the discussion, it is. It's not included as an element, but it is. But it is concluded. And the reason is, Judge, if you look again at the congressional minutes on the issue, they talk about that it was intended that the law was intended to punish offenses that were intentional, that were indecent, and that would they usually use language that would include one to register as a sex offender. You wouldn't do that for a person going to a nude beach who thinks that it's a nude beach and it just turns out that it isn't. So obviously, Congress intended to penalize wrongful conduct. And in order for it to be wrongful, it has to be indecent, and it's not indecent if the appellant has a reasonable mistake of fact. Any further questions from the members of the court?
Are you contending this is a constitutional error?
I believe as it relates to the third element, yes, in terms of whether or not this court should be convinced beyond a reason of harmlessness beyond a reasonable doubt. Yes, I do, Senior Judge.
Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, it deprives the appellant of a defense. The law is clear that anything that if it deprives the appellant of a defense, then we gauge for constitutional error. In this case, when the appellant is, when the panel is not instructed as to a defense, that deprives the appellant of that defense, and therefore it's constitutional in dimension.
So your argument is that this is depriving him of a defense entirely?
It deprives him of the panel's ability to consider a defense, which is would be pretty much the same thing, I would think.
But he, trial defense counsel, was able to argue to some extent that there was a reasonable mistake that occurred here.
Your Honor, actually, I think the fact that he was able to argue it inures to the appellant's benefit as to why this is of a constitutional error. Because, again, if you're told that reasonable mistake of fact is a defense as to four offenses, and you're not told that as to the fifth offense, the reasonable panel member is going to say, well, that's not a defense. So we're not going to consider the reasonableness of his thinking, which therefore, so the fact that he was able to argue it would lead the panel member, just as in Baker, where the appellant's counsel was arguing that they were relatively close in age, and the government counsel is allowed to say that's not a relevant factor, it enables the panel members to go back and say, well, maybe he did have a reasonable mistake of fact, but we're not told that that's a relevant factor, so we're not going to consider it.
But at any point, did the military judge or did trial counsel say that reasonable mistake of fact as to consent is not something you're allowed to consider in terms of whether this was indecent?
They did not.
And isn't that a distinction from Baker?
It is a distinction without a difference in the appellant's position. Thank you, judges.
Thank you. Government counsel?
May it please the court. Senior Judge Johnson, Judge Posh, and Judge Key, my name is Major Dale Porkle, and along with Ms. Mary Ellen Payne, we represent the United States in this matter. This court should hold that the military judge did not abuse his discretion when he declined to give the optional defense requested instruction related to indecency, because first, the requested instruction was not correct as a matter of law. Second, because the instruction he gave substantially covered the requested instruction. And third, the defense was not seriously impaired in its presentation or denied a defense. Even if this court finds that this was error, this error was non-constitutional and harmless to the appellant. As appellant's counsel stated, there's a test, a three-pronged test under Gibson and Carruthers, and in order for appellant to be successful in this court, they must meet all three prongs to show that the requested instruction should have been given. And in this case, it fails all three prongs. The first question is whether or not their requested instruction was correct as a matter of law, and the government's position is that it was not. The reason is the requested language and mistake of fact as to consent has two elements. The first is that it was a reasonable mistake of fact, and the second is that it was an honest mistake of fact. We get that from several cases, to include Davis, which the United States quoted in its brief and did a supplemental citation. And so the justification given by appellant at his trial was that if appellant reasonably believed as an objective matter that the other person consented, that should be enough. But that is not enough to raise mistake of fact as a consent. There has to be some scintilla of evidence that this mistake was also honest. And there is no evidence in this case that appellant, at the time he committed the offense, had an honest mistake of fact. Appellant did not testify, and the only insight we have into the mind of the appellant is really the text messages he sent to Senior Airman KB after the offense. And those text messages say clearly he was sorry, he knew she was uncomfortable, and asking for forgiveness. So there's no evidence to show that in his mind at the time he committed the offense, he had an honest mistake of fact.
Well, wasn't the defense's position at trial that from the appellant's perspective, this appeared to be a continuation from the events that occurred earlier, back when they were at the gas station, which was temporarily interrupted by the presence of other airmen, but once they were alone again, those two things were connected. Isn't that some evidence of a mistake of fact?
Well, Your Honor, the defense's position at trial was that that Senior Airman KB's lack of action showed why his mistake may be reasonable. But if you actually look at the testimony of Senior Airman KB and the sequence of events in that night, and I will get into the facts because I do think they matter for this question and also for the harmlessness, there really isn't a reasonable mistake of fact raised. What we have here is a squadron event where the appellant offered Senior Airman KB a ride home, and to her surprise, without her consent, turned left instead of turning right, took her to an abandoned parking lot where she told him, please take me home, and he, in response, locked the car doors. Then he started masturbating and told her it was her fault. She responded, please, I wanna go home, and then she froze, stayed in the car and looked away. And so there's no testimony in there that would really show how he had a mistake of fact as to consent with the actual facts that came out. What happened hours before, a lot of time had passed, several hours, but even if that were something to be considered, and it was considered by the members, that specific series of events, Senior McKay did not ask to be there. She specifically said she wanted to leave. The fact that he took her to an isolated place that was dark, not where she wanted to go and where she asked to leave, and he locked her in there.
But does that make the requested instruction an incorrect statement of law, or is it simply an argument about whether it really applies in this case given the evidence?
Well, Your Honor, the United States believes that mistake of fact as to consent is a term of art, and it matters in this trial because that specific instruction was given for other specifications and charges related to appellant's misconduct. And so to say mistake of fact as to consent as a defense is a term of art that requires both an honest and reasonable mistake of fact as to consent. And
but are we really talking about it as a defense, or are we just talking about the circumstances, all of the circumstances surrounding this incident?
Yes, Your Honor, and that is the difference, we believe, why the judge did not abuse his discretion. So as a term of art and as a matter of law, it would be incorrect to say mistake of fact as to consent was raised as a defense or a factor or an element. But the judge recognized that there was certainly facts that are relevant to determining the indecency. And we can get stuck in these factors that have come out of case law, consent, publicity, the relationship of the parties. But what really matters with indecency is whether or not it was conduct that amounted to immorality that's grossly vulgar, obscene, and repugnant. And so when we're looking at what the judge is required to instruct on and what the elements of the offense are, That's the definition of indecency we're looking for. These other things that may or may not come up, consent, the relationship, mistake of fact is a consent, are not requirements. And so, as a matter of law, the judge made the correct decision that these facts did not raise mistake of fact is the consent. So he would not give it as a factor to consider, but allow the defense to make the argument. And certainly,
if I just briefly, if the evidence as to whether appellant was mistaken as to the airman's consent, and the military judge allowed that evidence to come in, presumably for some purpose, why not instruct on it?
Again, Your Honor, I think the distinction is whether or not that he wanted to confuse the term of art for other offenses within the instructions, or allow the defense to use those facts as they applied, which are substantially covered in the instruction he gave, and allowed the defense to cross-examine and make the argument they wanted to make. So in a way, he was protecting the legal term mistake of fact is a consent, but then allowing the defense to put on the facts that they believed were necessary to show what was in the client's mind at the time of the offense. And certainly, when we're looking at the standard, we have to look at it from abuse of discretion. So whether or not reasonable minds could differ about whether or not to give this factor, there's no clear case law to say he should have given it, and he has substantial discretion in determining whether or not to give it. And so there's no evidence to say that his decision not to give it in this case was arbitrary or fanciful or unreasonable. And so for those reasons, the United States believes that the first Carruthers factor was not met by appellant in this case. For the second factor, whether or not the instruction that was given was substantially covered in the main instruction, we believe that this to be the case. And as appellant's counsel mentioned in his argument, the judge's rationale that he gave in the record at 1169 essentially talks about the second Carruthers factor, shows you why he did not abuse his discretion, that he's considering what he wanted to say, what the defense is arguing, and that all of this is covered in the instruction he's given. That's what he believes, and that's within his discretion to say, I believe that what you're asking for is covered, and I believe you can make those arguments. And so the second Carruthers factor is not satisfied by appellant in that what he gave allowed the appellant to make those arguments.
But what about the implication that I'm telling you how you can consider consent, but I'm not mentioning mistake of fact as to consent? Isn't there something to the defense's argument that by implication that sort of makes one consideration relevant and the other one perhaps not relevant, or not something that should be brought to the member's attention?
Well, Your Honor, if you look at what the defense actually argued, they did abandon, for all intents and purposes, mistake of fact as to consent in their argument. And so it's hard to say that what they could have said, because they took the approach in their argument with respect to Senior Airman KB and all of her offenses, first that she was not credible, and second that she was the aggressor, she consented to these acts.
Well, to the extent that trial defense counsel decided at the time of argument to lean into consent as opposed to mistake, doesn't that perhaps reflect the judge's ruling that he was going to instruct them with regard to consent and not to mistake?
Well, Your Honor, potentially, but the facts of the case actually show a better argument for defense that she consented to it, that she, the facts of the prior relationship, the incident several hours earlier where she was the one who initiated this contact, there really isn't an argument to be made that he was reasonably mistaken about her consent, when the only testimony we have about what happened in that car is that she wanted to go home and he didn't listen to her and locked her in the car and proceeded to masturbate in front of her. So we don't have facts that raise reasonable mistake of fact as to consent or an honest mistake of fact as to consent. Now what appellant argued in their brief is that the incident prior at the gas station isn't relevant for anything except mistake of fact as to consent. But that's not how they argued it at trial. So they're trying to make a different argument now than they made at trial. And there's no way to know what the members would have thought about this argument, because at trial they abandoned mistake of fact as a consent and went specifically with consent. And again, what we're looking for here is a totality test. Under Walton and the case law for indecent exposure, these factors are not elements, they're not required. The presence or absence of any of these indications are not necessarily what makes something indecent. What makes something indecent is the obscenity from an objective point of view. Finally, moving on to the third Carruthers factor, whether or not this is on such a vital point, it deprived the accused of a defense. And so in their brief, appellant conceded that this is not a defense. Mistake of fact is to consent is not a defense to the crime. It's also not an element of the crime. And so what we're looking for here is whether or not the accused was seriously impaired in their presentation. And the United States believes no, first because they abandoned this defense almost entirely, and second because the facts don't show a reasonable mistake of fact as a consent. What we're looking at in terms of indecency is it's not really relevant what she didn't do, this acquiescence that we discussed earlier, but it matters what he was doing. And again, those facts are that he surprised her. She was an unsuspecting person at that point in time who was offered a ride home, accepted a ride home, and found herself in a parking lot with someone with his pants down who is very senior to her in age. And when we start to look at sort of the totality of the facts here, there are a lot of different ways that these facts could show indecency rather than just consent. So that's sort of moving on to the harmlessness of this. If this court were to find it was an abuse of discretion to not include this as an actual factor, and again, the United States believes that there's no precedent for that, and even if reasonable minds could differ, that they should defer to the trial judge and his judgment in that case. But if we're looking for harmlessness, we're looking at what the members were actually reviewing as facts for the accused. And we have a lot of case law to say that even if she consented, public sexual acts may be indecent. Or even if he thought she consented, it would be indecent for a senior NCO to take a young airman off base, lock her in a car door, and masturbate in front of her when she says she wants to go home. You have the case law about, let's see, Graham, where was the first time that CAF found that publicity was not necessarily required for indecency. And so if you don't find that this dark parking lot was even public, what they found there was an unsuspecting and uninterested member of the population had no choice but to see appellant naked in that case. That's essentially what happened in this case. Senior Airman B was unsuspecting and uninterested by all facts and had no choice but to see appellant masturbate in front of her. So certainly there was no error that had a substantial influence on the findings by not making this a factor specifically that the members could consider.
I guess we don't really know whether it would have tipped the scales in the members' minds. In this case, it appears, based upon some of the specifications that did not result in a guilty finding, the members more likely than not rejected some degree of the airman's testimony.
Yes, Your Honor.
And as the appellant argues, if the members are told you need to consider consent, and perhaps that's what they focused on, and rejected any indication that he may have been the appellant may have been mistaken as to her actual consent. So it's hard for me, at least, to understand how we could impute knowledge to the members or rationalize what they would have otherwise thought or what conclusion they came to. Though one thing I would be interested in hearing about, though, is with respect to the mens rea issue, though, that raised for appellant. And the reason why I'm interested in this is because we've kind of been going back and forth as to whether this is an actual defense here or whether this is just a factor that the judge should have instructed on. And I think that that's kind of a critical issue to both sides' arguments. So what is the government's position on that?
Your Honor, the government's position with respect to the mens rea is that this is coming from an objective point of view, whether or not something's indecent. And we can look to other UCMJ articles that deal with indecency or obscenity to find this objective point of view. Certainly facts to consider and whether or not something was objectively indecent would be potentially an accused mistake of fact as to whether or not something were a nude beach. But in that, you'd have to determine whether or not it's reasonable. Did they reasonably believe this was a nude beach that they were on? And if from an objective point of view, it was not reasonable, then you could still find that appellant's or accused actions to show up on a nude beach to be indecent from an objective standpoint. And it seems clear that both with the congressional intent, that consent is not an element, and with the case law that's come out saying that even if there is consent, it can still be indecent, we have to really make sure that we're looking at this from a public point of view, that consensual sexual activity on a beach between two adults is public and could be indecent, or consensual activity between two airmen in a semi-private situation could be indecent even if they're consenting. And so just a subjective test isn't enough to protect society from what we're trying to protect them from, which is indecent conduct that amounts to a form of immorality or impurity and is grossly vulgar or obscene. And we can't just measure that from an internal accused point of view. With respect to the mind of the members, Your Honor, if I may go back to your other point, mistake of fact is that consent was given as a defense to several of the specifications with this particular victim and other victims. He was actually convicted of an offense where they raised mistake of fact as a consent for the abusive sexual contact with a different victim. So the members were able to consider it as a defense and convict him for one set of facts, consider it as a defense for this victim in a different situation, and he was acquitted. And so when you're looking at what's in the mind of the members, if you were to go through and say, the judge gave it as a factor, but then apply that to the actual facts of this test, of this case, there is no reasonable member that would come to the conclusion that she consented or he was mistaken and honestly mistaken about her consent in this situation, especially with the text messages that we have afterwards, especially with his actions in response to her saying, take me home, he locks the door. In response to her saying, I'm uncomfortable, I don't want to be here, his response is, I don't care, you made me do this, and then he starts and finishes this act in front of her while she's looking away. She's not participating, she's not talking him through it, she's not egging him on, she's not talking about this book that they were talking about earlier. She's silent, looking away, wishing this were over, and then goes home. And so even if the judge were to have given this, there's really no reasonable way to come to a conclusion that he was mistaken about her consent in this situation. So,
counsel, I have a couple of questions about that. One is, the members aren't required to accept everything that she says at face value in her testimony, are they? They can find some things more reliable than other things. Would you agree with that?
Yes, Your Honor. And I would say in this case, if you look to defense counsel's argument at trial, they concede this act happened. They concede that it happened the way she explained. And so as much as they want to say she's a liar, in this case, they concede this happened exactly where she said, how she said it. The only thing they argue at trial is that she wanted it.
And then my second question is, would you agree that the military judges, the rationale that he gave for not giving the instruction wasn't that there are no facts here to support a mistake, it was that I think you can argue that with the instruction that I'm giving?
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree that he focused more on the second Carruthers factor. Unfortunately, a lot of the initial discussion between the parties happened in an 802, and so we don't necessarily know the entirety of what was discussed when this was raised, but we do know on the record that his his rationale was focused more on substantial compliance with what he was going to say, that it could make that argument. And we would just point to the fact that what defense said on the record was not enough to raise mistake of fact as a consent, because it did not address the honest prong.
So is it your argument that if they were ever going to be entitled to have the judge say something specifically about mistake, it would have to be an honest and a reasonable mistake? And otherwise, it's just not something that needs to be drawn to the member's attention at all.
Yes, Your Honor, in order to raise mistake of fact, is the consent as a factor. And I think if you look at Walters, that's one of the findings of this court. That was one of the findings of this court, that indecency depends on the totality of the circumstances, and evidence that would be offered to support an honest and reasonable mistake of fact would be generally admissible in determining. So and it has to be both, or it's neither.
Well, isn't that saying that if it is both, then it would have to be raised? But it's not saying if it's only one, then it can't be raised. Those are two different things, aren't they?
Yes, Your Honor. And the United States position is, as a term of art, in the way that we use mistake of fact as the consent, it's both or neither. And certainly, if the defense wants to make this argument as facts, not factors, but facts, when you're looking at indecency, they can, and they did, to the extent they could with these facts. But in all honesty, these facts are not good for consent. And their only argument at trial was that she wanted this, that members would have to disbelieve her. And the members could have disbelieved her and still found accused X indecent. They could have not cared about consent and decided that what he did with this airman right outside a base was indecent anyway.
So kind of drawing on something that appellant's counsel brought up, aren't all the factors that defense is arguing indicate that this was consensual? Can't those also sort of equally be used to indicate, and if they weren't consensual, he could reasonably think that it was consensual? I mean, are those two things sort of tied together?
Yes, Your Honor, and just so I understand, the factors about her flirting and not getting out of the car, not calling her husband, those?
And the prior incident at the gas station, all of it.
They can make the argument, Your Honor, and I think they did. And I believe the members either weren't persuaded or found it irrelevant. And when we're talking about indecency, that very well could be the case. You know, we have this objective societal standard about what's indecent. And so really when we're getting to this harmlessness test, they could have completely disregarded the factor of consent. It's not an element, it's not required to be considered. And they could have said, well, even if she wanted to, this was indecent. Does that answer your question, Your Honor?
I don't have a follow-up question, so we'll leave it at that.
Yes,
I do have one question. The in the cases where we've applied Carruthers, I'm at a loss to think of any cases or found cases where it was basically a mistake of fact, defense, if you will. It wasn't that posture. And we could just go on and apply Carruthers and see what comes out in the calculation, I suppose. But why aren't we asking about some evidence, the some evidence standard? And maybe this is a question more for the appellant's counsel, but is this a case where because it's a possible defense, even though if it's a definition and not an element per se, that we would be looking at whether there was some evidence of mistake of fact or some evidence of reasonable belief as opposed to the three-part Carruthers test?
Well, Your Honor, I think that question was posed to defense at trial, and defense conceded, no, this is not a defense and not an element. So the discussion between the judge and the defense ended there to the extent that the court finds that waiver or forfeiture. In this case, especially with what is in the UCMJ and looking at RCM 920, the judge instructed on what he was required to instruct on. And so the United States position, when we're talking about terms of art, like mistake of fact as a consent, is that we would have to have this scintilla, some evidence from a legal sufficiency point of view that was raised, and that wasn't really fleshed out on the record here. It was conceded by defense, and they just wanted this to be a factor And certainly, I can't recall who asked the question, but someone asked whether or not had he not given any factors if he would erred, and the United States position is no, because he met what was required under RCM 920. And the case that appellant relies on, Baker, is an older case from 2002, and the United States believes that after Baker, the now standard benchmark construction was given. It actually added these factors to be considered. And so they've expanded the standard benchmark construction to be exactly what the judge gave in this case. And so when we're looking at recent case law like Dawkins, where there was mistake of fact as the consent, the court found mistake of fact as the consent in Dawkins, but the judge gave the same instruction in that case that the judge gave in this case, which is really indicative that it's something to be considered, but it's not required, certainly not an abuse of discretion to give the benchmark instruction without the factor of mistake of fact as the consent.
Counsel, I have a I have a question for you with regard to the harmlessness test.
Yes, Your Honor.
So would you agree, in your brief and in your oral argument, you've sort of separately analyzed the third prong of the Carruthers test and then harmlessness, but would you ever really, if appellant is satisfied the third prong of the Carruthers test, that they were basically impaired in presentation of a defense on a vital point, I mean, would that ever, could you ever find that and then also find that it was harmless?
Well, Your Honor, it's important to note the standard of review difference between the Carruthers factor, which is abuse of discretion, and the de novo standard of review for the harmlessness test. And so I think there's a way, potentially, where reasonable minds could differ and find abuse of discretion standard was not violated in the third factor, but had you come at it from a de novo point of view, potentially, this court would come to a different conclusion.
Sure, but then you would never get through the Carruthers test to error to find that, to test that for harmlessness, I guess. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, so you're saying that the standards are different, but if you don't get through the abuse of discretion, then you're not going to make it to harmlessness.
Yes, Your Honor. If there are no more questions, the United States will say that this court can be convinced that the judge did not abuse his discretion, and in denying the defense instruction, and even if he did, the error was harmless and did not have a substantial influence on the findings. Thank you.
Thank you. Appellant's counsel.
Thank you, Judge. Your Honor, the government's position seems to be this. The defense instruction was incorrect, but the judge gave it anyway. The two of those can't both be true. The judge, in fact, neither one of them is true. The government says that there was no evidence of a reasonable mistake of fact, and I believe it was the senior judge who asked whether there was some evidence of reasonable mistake of fact. There's a number of factors and a number of facts to consider in making that determination. One of those things is, of course, the incident in the car, apparently hours prior to this particular incident. But the other thing is, from Senior Ehrman's own testimony, where she says, you made me do this, it's your, or she says that the appellant said that he was aroused from the prior conversation and that it was her fault and he needed to take care of it. One could construe those words a number of ways, and one of those ways is that the appellant had a reasonable mistake of fact as to whether or not she was consenting. There are other facts that the court should consider. There was a prior consensual sexual act between the appellant's wife and Senior Airman KB. So the entire nature of their relationship, as inappropriate and improper as it was of a sexualized nature. And while the government says that the defense abandoned that instruction, that is simply not the case. The defense argued that that after KB initiates this highly sexualized counter, they don't continue it immediately, but he is obviously aroused, and you can infer that from the situation. The defense argues that appellant is still aroused. He still thinks she's down for this. The defense pointed out that KB chose to remain in the car, and the defense argued maybe she wasn't that interested anymore, but it was reasonable for him to believe at that point she was still interested in that sort of encounter. So to argue that the appellant defense team abandoned that instruction or abandoned that element, that the factor, is simply incorrect. The military judge did say that their prior interaction was relevant, and that is why he was giving the instruction that he gave. So it's not a question of the judge said, I'm not going to do this because it's not raised by the evidence. The judge said it was raised by the evidence. He just gave the wrong instruction. In fact, it is exactly the same issue that arose in Baker, where the Baker court said, while lack of consent may not be an element, both consent and reasonable mistake of fact as to consent are certainly among the attendant circumstances, particularly where the conduct at issue is not otherwise wrongful, and reasonable mistake could give rise to a reasonable doubt as to the element of the indecency. And that's from the Baker court at page 336. So certainly it was not abandoned. Certainly it was not covered by the main instruction. Certainly the defense instruction was correct. So the question really boils down to, in the appellant's position, one of error. And this is where we get to the point of where the appellant was denied the opportunity to present the argument on the main on one of his two main defenses to this particular element. Government's argument that there could have been indecency simply because of rank then goes to a legal question for this court to determine whether or not the specification would have been legally sufficient. But the appellant would argue that it is not, and we would point to the fact that there was a previous threesome between the appellant and his wife, and we're not here arguing about that. So the government apparently didn't believe that that incident in itself was indecent. It's certainly wrong. It's certainly fraternization. Again, we're not going down that road. But what we're talking about is the congressional requirement or discussion about indecency that should rise to the level of placing someone on the sex offender registry. That is the specific language from the congressional minutes. This is not that. Baker tells us that it is a subjective standard, and Baker tells us that it is among the attendant circumstances. Now, the government says that the members were still allowed to apply reasonable mistake of fact. Respectfully, that's not correct. The military judge specifically gave a spillover instruction. He said, you can't do what the government wants you to do. You can't apply the facts from one and apply them to the other. So certainly when the panel members go back, they're saying, well, the judge told us that we can apply reasonable mistake of fact to A, B, C, and D. We can't for E. Your Honor, based on the arguments of the appellant requests, subject to any further questions from the members of the court, that the specification of the charge, and the charge be dismissed. Thank you, members of the court.
Thank you, counsel. Oops. All right. I'd like to thank both counsel for their arguments. The court will render a decision in due course. The court is now closed.
All rise.